Are you running on empty?
Good afternoon and welcome. You're listening to the Computer Guys. We got Kevin and Carl here today. Dave is out. Well, he's celebrating his birthday in some way, shape, or form. And it is his birthday today, so we're wishing him a happy birthday. And he's taking a little vacation, not just because it's his birthday, well, but because he deserves it.
Right? That's for sure. And this is Carl, and Dave is off for today, and I'm filling in. So I'm happy to be here, Kevin.
First and foremost, we're here to take your calls, so you can give us a call. Dave always says the numbers, 395-1450, is that right? That's what I'm thinking. So you can give us a call, 395-1450, and we will take that and hopefully answer any question that you have. If you've heard something in the news that you want to know more about, we can give you some advice on that. The other way to get a hold of us is to send us an email. It's computerguys@whtc.com. And we will be checking that throughout the week. So if you have a question, go ahead and send us an email. Again, it's computerguys@whtc.com. And we will do our best to answer any question you throw at us. If not, we've got news here. Always news. More news about computers and scams and internet-related things. And Google and Apple and, you know, all the usuals.
All technology topics, you bet.
That's right. So you've got an interesting one there.
Well, it's the day of the presidential debate. This is just a sidelight on the presidential campaign. This article says that Barack Obama has opened up a new front in his battle with Republican John McCain, and the new front is video games. The Obama campaign is placing advertisements for the candidate inside the online versions of some of the hottest-selling video games. If you play, for instance, Xbox 360 Live, and if you play Burnout Paradise, Madden 09, NASCAR 09, NHL 09, or Skate, if, for instance, you're driving down the road and you see a billboard in the game, you can see a billboard advertising for Barack Obama for president. So it's a new frontier, I guess, when it comes to the presidential campaign.
Yeah, and this isn't saying, you know, because we're not here to talk politics. So we're just talking about the technology of that and the fact that you can buy advertising on a video game.
That's inside the game. You see it while you're playing the game, like it's a billboard or if it's the sideboard on the hockey rink. You know, there are always ads there in real life. Well, they put real ads inside the video game.
Exactly. So theoretically, and I don't know how this would work, you could probably buy an ad and just put your name in there if you wanted to. So, you know, if you know somebody who's a video gamer and you want to surprise them, you could contact the manufacturer of their favorite game and maybe for their birthday, just throw a little advertisement in there. Now, it's going to show up all year round. And it'll say happy birthday, whatever their name is. And I don't have any idea how much that would cost.
Yes, but the cost might be prohibitive.
It might be a little expensive. But this is a whole new ball game here, is that you can advertise inside of video games. And this is, you know, along the lines of as video game popularity just increases, one thing that they've found is it's a huge market, not only for the developers, but all of the other product placement that can go inside of video games. Sometimes you get actors to lend voices or you know, their actual persona to a video game, like a movie character. And you can also, you know, the music, soundtracks, it's a huge way for small bands to sort of get their foot in the door by kind of saying, hey, we'll put the soundtrack together for your video game. And now political advertisements.
Right. And as Kevin's saying, it's not that the advertising is new. I'm sure soft drinks and clothing and everything else has been advertised in video games already. It's just that this is the first time a presidential candidate has showed up in there.
Exactly. So if you've got any of those games, take a look for that. Hey, if you're playing one right now and you see it, let us know. We'd love to hear what it looks like. But yeah, that's something that there's going on in the world of video games. This in the news about the phishing scams on the rise. FTC warns, something else for you to worry about in these tough economic times. As if we needed something else to fret over, the government is warning that email efforts to separate you from your hard-earned money may be on the rise during the current money crisis. The FTC says it's likely that would-be thieves will step up phishing attempts. For those not familiar with the term, that's when a scammer sends an email disguised as being from an official financial institution like a bank or mortgage company. Then they try to get you to part with personal information like account numbers and passwords. They use that data to swipe your identity and access your funds. So beware. Be very wary of these emails that are sent to you from your bank, from other banks, from anything that's trying to look legitimate. The good news is a lot of times these are sent from places you have no connection with. It'll be some bank that you don't have any accounts at.
Right.
And that's nice that it's kind of generic, but every once in a while it'll come from your actual bank or it'll look like that. So watch out for
those.
Or
maybe a place like PayPal or eBay.
Ugh, that's bad. The PayPal knockoffs, oh, they're bad. So watch out for those. It's a good time to, if you want more information on consumer scams, it's FTC.gov. Oh, this is a long address. You might want to just type it into a search.
Okay. I think something else to keep in mind about that, though, is that it means that usually the email, they're inviting you to click on a link inside the email. If you avoid that and if you just open your own web browser and go directly to your financial institution, you bypass the phishing attempt.
Exactly.
But also, when you click on the link, it does open, if you click on the link inside the web, inside the email, it does open your web browser and Internet Explorer, as well as Firefox. If you have it enabled, they have a lot of those phishing sites already entered and won't let you go there. So it's a good thing to have the anti-phishing enabled and updated.
Yep, and that's with the newest version. So that's a good reason, you know, if you're still running an older version of Internet Explorer, it's a good reason to upgrade. That was added in version 7, which has been out for a while now, and there's no reason you shouldn't upgrade. So definitely keeping your system and your browsers up to date. They do kind of give you a little security, extra security there. So definitely something you want to do. This also, the FTC in the news, they have shut down a spam ring. They won a preliminary legal victory against what is called one of the largest spam gangs on the internet, persuading a federal court in Chicago on Tuesday to freeze the group's assets and order the spam network to shut down. So they have been responsible for a lot of the fake medicines and supplements and, you know, various product emails that you get and just love to get in your inbox every single day. So hopefully those numbers will go down since they've been shut down.
This is a continuing problem, and it's eats up all kind of bandwidth as and it's just annoying for the end user.
It makes your life a little less enjoyable unless you really like those emails, you know. And if you do, I'm sure you can get put on lots of lists if you'd like. So also, another news story there.
Yes, it says here that searching the internet may help middle-aged and older adults keep their memories sharp.
Hey,
this
that's
is
good
according
news.
To U.S. researchers. Researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles, studied people doing web searches while their brain activity was recorded with MRI scans. And Dr. Gary Small, the researcher, said this: what we saw was people who had internet experience used more of their brain during the search. This suggests that just searching on the internet may train the brain, that it may keep it active and healthy. We've heard, I'm in that middle-aged group, actually, and sometimes the suggestion is crossword puzzles, Sudoku, things like that, to keep up your mental activity. And this research at least suggests that perhaps becoming internet savvy and knowing how to go on the internet and do searches and read there, that this even can help your brain activity.
That's right,
Carl.
I
find that helpful.
That's right. So when your wife says, hey, you're spending too much time on the computer, you're saying, I'm just trying to keep my brain sharp. You know,
right.
I'm doing you a favor so I can continue to talk to you, you know, late into my ears, right?
Well, if as long as she's doing her crosswords
now she's doing
I'm doing the internet, I think I have equal
there
footing.
There you go.
Here
so
now.
Maybe you should just everybody should just build some extra internet search time in. It's kind of like exercise, you know. For those who don't want to get out of your chair, you could just do a little extra searching. At least keep your brain sharp. May not be able to pick up a basketball and play, but you can still search. So that's good news. Is, you know, just the fact of doing what so many people do every day actually is provides you a benefit. You know, so that is good news. The EU is warning about MP3 volume. This is coming out of Belgium. Nothing like the joy of turning on your MP3 player, cranking the volume way up, and enjoying your favorite tunes, except the part about the volume. The European Union is warning music lovers that they risk permanent hearing loss from listening to music with the volume turned up too loud. Scientists say between 2.5 and 10 million Europeans could end up suffering hearing loss from listening to their digital music at unsafe volumes. Scientists say if the music played higher than 89 decibels for more than an hour each day for at least 5 years, hearing problems can set in. They're launching a campaign to turn it down. It's aimed at children and young people because they may be damaging their hearing without even realizing it. They are also considering a law to lower the legal limit of MP3 player volume levels to 100 decibels or less. Interesting. A good thing is to turn that down. 89 decibels, I have no idea of how loud that is. So they should come with a little, I don't know, a little display on there as to how loud it actually is so you could know. A little red light starts beeping.
Right. Decibels, that's an interesting thing. I can't necessarily explain all the technical aspects of it. Something about each number is double the volume, I guess, something in terms of that. But what I find interesting is that at least on, I think it's most of the newer iPods, there is actually a setting that you can set to set the maximum volume of the device. And you can set maybe at two-thirds or one-half of what it's possible to doing. That means that if you turn your device up all the way, it's actually going to limit it to what is would be a safe listening level. So I think there are some moves to take that seriously about listening to music too loudly and ways to protect yourself by making those kinds of settings on your devices.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good thing to think about. That's nice that Apple thought about that. I've seen other ones where there's two volume settings basic. There's like a normal, and then there's a loud setting. And generally, they default to the normal, which doesn't get all that loud. But you can bypass it if you need to. Or sometimes if it's in your car and your input isn't very good, or if you have to go through a tape deck, you kind of have to jack that volume up so you can actually hear what's going on. This is interesting. Microsoft in the news again, of course. The Windows team is readying the second service pack, Service Pack 2 for Vista. So this is hot news here, just out.
I have not heard this yet.
Yeah, and for its server complement, Windows Server 2008, they're aiming to deliver a Service Pack 2 before its release of Windows 7, according to my sources. Basically, they're getting ready to deliver a beta. Well, actually, the source says that they've heard that they've delivered a beta version already to select providers, hardware, and software partners. Not for public release yet, but their goal is to deliver Service Pack 2 before Windows 7, which is going to be early 2010, late 2009 is kind of what they're speculating. So we should see another Vista Service Pack. Service Pack 1 was a huge release, and if you haven't downloaded it yet for Vista, we'd recommend that you go and do that and start taking advantage of the extra security, makes things a little bit faster. Overall, it's definitely worthwhile doing.
Right, there have been improvements in that, and well, it's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the major things that Service Pack 1 did is it helped out the search functionality and really made that end up taxing your system less. So it's a good thing to do to go and get that. And Service Pack 2 on the way out for Vista. A lot of people still are, you know, hesitating with Vista, saying, oh, it's so bad, it's terrible. Yeah, generally, it's not true. You know, there's a lot of bad press out there, and we've talked about that in the past. So we'd recommend, you know, give it a shot. And there are still ways to get XP out there. Dell is still offering on some systems the ability to have XP pre-installed. So you can go that route if you want to.
And, Kevin, just a reminder to our listeners, we are the Computer Guys from Macatawa Technologies, and we are here to take any phone calls regarding your computer technology questions, 395-1450. Another article here about the news. It says here that some of the most vicious internet predators are hackers who infect thousands of PCs with special viruses and lash the machines together into botnets to pump out spam or to attack other computers. But now, security researchers say that cell phones, and not just PCs, are the next likely conscripts into the automated armies. With web-enabled cell phones and other kinds of internet connectivity on cell phones, it's a possibility that that hackers might find vulnerabilities in those devices and be able to perhaps steal information or do other kinds of nasty things through your cell phone, not just your PC.
Yeah, and in that term, the botnet, basically, that's what these other spammers that the FTC just cracked down on. It's essentially when they they run software and it gets on your computer in the form of like a virus or, you know, potentially some more malicious software, and they get a little bit of control over your computer. We'll actually touch on that again. We're going to go ahead and take this call. Good afternoon. You're on with the computer guys.
Yeah, someone recently suggested that I buy a can of compressed air to blow out the dust in my computer. Is that a good idea? And if so, do I run the risk of hurting anything if I blow it in the wrong places?
You know, it's not a bad idea. The only thing is when you blow it out of your computer, it's going to go somewhere else. So it's going to go into your face or in your house or, you know, somewhere where you might not want it. If you have the ability to disconnect the computer and take it outside when you go blow it out, you're going to be a lot happier, and so is whoever vacuums the carpet. You don't really have to worry much about damaging anything. You know, the key things that you want to blow out are any fans that have dust collected on them, or heat sinks. They're little metal pieces that have a lot of fins on them, and that's what helps dissipate all that excess heat. And over time, you're right, they do get clogged with dust. The other thing you can do is to use a vacuum cleaner very gently with either a small brush or really kind of a small nozzle on it to try and vacuum that out, and then you're kind of saving yourself from the mess. But some of that stuff gets packed in there pretty tight, and you really do have to use compressed air. So nothing to worry about other than the mess.
Okay, but is it a good practice to do? Is it something that should be done annually? Or
you don't have to do it all that often. One way you can check is to just pop the side of the case off and look inside. Now, if your computer sits on the floor, the actual tower part, and it sits like right on carpet, it's going to be worse than if it's up 6 inches even. So a good idea is after you clean it out to put it up 6 inches just to get it off the floor. You'll get a lot less dust in your machine just by raising it up a couple inches.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
I think something else to keep in mind, though, with the compressed air is that sometimes you might be tempted to say, oh, look how fast I can make this fan spin with the compressed air.
And it starts whizzing.
Occasionally, that could possibly damage the bearing in the fan. So my advice is to somehow lightly hold the fan so it doesn't spin and then blow the air into the heat sink.
Yeah, or to use just like a little pulse, just a little burst, not just kind of hold the trigger down and blast away until that fan's really, really humming. So,
okay, good warning. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Yeah, something only guys would do.
That's right. You get that thing going, it starts singing. You can overspin those things. They're designed to run at a certain speed, and you're right. You kind of go too fast, and it just kind of goes out on you. So. Definitely something to watch out for, but man, that stuff can be messy inside. So
yeah, if it's in your house,
possible, take it out.
Right, right, exactly. You might be surprised how big the cloud of dust will be.
Yep, and it's not only when you're blowing on it; it's when you turn your computer back on and you've moved all that dust around and it gets sucked into the fan, and then boom, just starts blowing out all over as soon as you push that power button. So yeah, so we were talking about the botnets, and that may be expanding to cell phones too. So this is, you know, as there are more internet-connected phones, anybody who gets their email direct on their cell phone or does some basic web surfing on there, that is the next, that may be the next frontier for hacking. And who knows, we might need to see antivirus for, you know, handheld devices. And this is a heads up to all the companies that are making those. So we'll see what happens with that. There's nothing real threatening as at this point in time.
Right, right.
But people are just kind of speculating that, hey, this might be the next stage of that. So we'll keep you informed if you stay tuned and as to what you can expect and what to watch out for. So, all right, let's go ahead and take this other call. Good afternoon. You're on with the computer, guys.
Yeah, I am very new with the computer.
That's okay.
And I don't know anything about it. That's why I just turned it on and heard you on the radio, and I thought, well, I've got a printer that says it is not online. It says it. Okay, now it says the status is error.
Okay, now it's telling you on the printer itself, like you have a little light on the printer or a status screen?
No, I've got the printer turned on.
Okay.
It's an HP 656C.
Okay.
And I've got Vista, Windows Vista.
Okay.
And I just went up here on my Yahoo Mail page, and I got into the file, and the file says print, you know. So I clicked on print, and then it in this little box here. It says, you know, select a printer, add a printer, and all this. And then the status says error.
Have you ever been able to print before with this printer
yes.
on? Yes, you have. Okay.
Yes.
One thing you can do is to basically turn that printer off.
Okay.
All the way and let it just let it sit there for a minute and then go ahead and turn that back on. Sometimes that'll force it to reconnect to your computer. Now, when you do that, it's still going to have this old job that it wants to print. So you're going to need to go into your control panel. Now, you said you have Vista, right?
Yes.
So from that little start button at the bottom left of your screen.
Okay, I'm going to click on that now.
Okay, you see a function in there called control panel?
Yeah.
Okay, if you go into that, there's a section that's called printers. And if you're in that printers, you'll see all the printers on your computer.
Let's see. That would be under what? It's got system maintenance, security, network, hardware.
Okay. You're going to be under hardware and sound. And then underneath that, there's a category called printer.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll click on that.
Okay. Now, do you see your printer listed there?
Yes. It's it says HP DiskJet or DeskJet 660C.
It'll probably be fine. That's the generic driver that's built right into your computer, so you don't have to worry about that.
Uh-huh.
Does it have a little check mark by it? A little green check mark?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, that might be part of the problem.
It's got a little error check mark against the HP DeskJet 6600 series.
Okay, now do you have more than one printer connected?
No,
just the one?
Yeah.
Okay, and the 60, what was the actual model number of your printer again?
656C.
656C, okay. And you see that, you see a 660 series?
Yes, 660C, yes.
Okay, go ahead and turn your printer back on.
Okay.
And in this little box, it'll say either offline or ready next to the printer. Do you see a little indicator there?
No, I don't.
Okay, next to any of those printers, does it say the word offline or ready near either of them?
None of them. Above it, it says Microsoft document, Microsoft Office document.
Okay.
And then now it says offline.
Okay, next to which one?
The 660C.
Okay, see that's...
That would be the one I would have, yes.
Yeah. Now, with your printer, do you have to, is it a USB connection? Is it a little square connector?
That connects? I believe it is, yes.
Okay. You're going to want to take that out of the back of the printer.
Okay.
Wait about 30 seconds and then plug it back in. And then it should try and reconnect.
Okay. And it should try to... back online again?
Yeah, it should try and force it back on. If not, what you can do is delete it while it's disconnected. If that doesn't force it back online, basically go ahead and delete it, and then it will recreate itself when you reconnect it.
Okay, how do you just hit the delete button?
Yeah, when you have that printer selected, just go ahead and hit the delete button.
Okay, and I am not that familiar with it. Would that be on the keyboard here someplace?
Yeah, you can do it on the keyboard, or if at the top you see a little indicator that says delete this printer, or if you right-click on it, it'll give you an option to delete. Any one of those will work.
View, sort, group by, stack, replace, paste.
Yeah, you basically want to reinstall this printer is what you're going to want to do. That'll probably be the easiest way for you to get it up and working again.
I don't find no delete button here any place.
Do you have a delete key on your keyboard?
Yeah, is there a delete key on the keyboard, hon? Where? Oh, there it is. Okay, I hit delete.
Okay. Now it should take a couple seconds and then that should disappear.
Whoops.
Not good.
Not yeah. good, because I got back into the, how'd they get back into that? Told you I wasn't any good at this.
Okay, basically what you're going to want to do is get into that printer menu. and then delete that instance of the printer. And then when you're done deleting it, go ahead and plug that cable back into your printer while your printer is on.
Uh-huh.
And your computer's going to reinstall it, and then you should be able to print just fine.
Okay, we'll give her a try.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Maybe you guys should have talked to Honey.
Honey?
Did you say Honey?
Oh, that's right. Oh. That's right. She knew where the delete key was. So, yeah, anytime it goes offline with Vista and that printer is a couple years older, it's got a lot of driver support. You can plug in any older device like that, anything from one of those major manufacturers, and Vista's going to probably have that driver built in. It makes it really easy. So,
it does, right. The drivers are all right there. They have some huge encyclopedia of drivers installed, and it takes care of most things that way.
It does. It does. So, anybody else? Any other questions? We've got a couple minutes here, so you can give us a call, 395-1450. I'm trying to decipher.
Close by.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Okay, so we have... Wow, you got it. That was specific. Is that in 30 seconds? Man, you're good. He's got this all timed out. Red's in here running the board for us today. We appreciate that.
That's for sure.
As Dave is gone. But anyway, that is... do you have one more quick story that we can throw in here?
About the Bedall water-powered clock.
Oh,
a product whose time has come in this green age. The water clock is designed to keep time and take advantage of looking for ways to conserve energy. The clock runs on water, regular tap water, to which you add a dash of salt. Once you do, the clock has all it's need to generate its own energy and keep time. To keep the clock running, you need to change or add water and salt as the reservoir runs dry, basically every 2 to 3 weeks.
That's not bad.
It has an internal memory that helps it remember the time, and the digital display is bright. It's not powered by batteries, and it's only $16.
Oh, see, and now for more information, do we have some place we can go to check that out?
BedallWhatsNext.com. That's BEDOL, WhatsNext.com.
Now, that is a great Christmas gift for anybody who has, you know.
To check that out.
Wants
that's
to see that
pretty
the time
interesting.
Is. And if you've got no ideas as to what to get somebody, you could get them a water-powered clock. Hopefully, the company is working on a water-powered laptop. That we can just throw a little water on. But just remember, they haven't released it yet, so don't try it at home. And if they do, we'll make sure that we have one here that you can check out. But anyways, are we approaching our time here? Okay. Is it? I hear it. I hear the music. There it is. Anyway, that means it's the end of another show. Thanks for tuning in today. If you weren't able to catch us today or you want to pass us on to your friends, check out the podcast. Easiest way to do that is type WHTC or the Computer Guys into the Apple iTunes Music Store, and you can download our podcast and listen to us anytime you want. Again, we are from Macatawa Technologies. We're located on the south side of Holland, 399 East 32nd Street. That is one block west of 32nd and 31. And thanks, Carl, for joining us today.
Thank you, Kevin,
for running the board.
Fun
and we
being
will
here.
Be back next week.